In October 1957, the Soviet Union shocked the U.S. with their launch of the Sputnik 1, a 183-pound basketball-sized satellite that orbited the Earth every 98 seconds. Intent on regaining the upper hand in the space race, Congress passed legislation creating the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. President Dwight Eisenhower signed the legislation into law on this date in 1958. Joining us now to talk about the creation of NASA and the agency's early days is Tom Durkin, Deputy Director of the South Dakota Space Grant Consortium. The consortium serves as a link between NASA and the citizens of South Dakota. Tom, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl. It's good to be here.
Well, what was the nature of U.S. space exploration before the creation of NASA?
Well, of course, before the creation, as you kind of touched on there in the beginning, was we were involved with the space race with the Soviet Union, and they had won the first leg of that race by launching Sputnik in 1957, and really it was you kind of have to look at the times that we were in at that time to see the incentive for the creation of NASA, and really what was going on was there was kind of a worldwide competition to show the differences and the advantages, of our style of government compared to the Soviets. And so one of the ways in showing superiority is technical superiority. So the race for space and developing those technologies was very much in demand, if you will, by both governments, and that's why the race was so intense at that time.
Well, take us back to October 1957. How big a shock was Sputnik to the American public?
It was big in the sense that the Soviets won that that leg of the race, and we didn't want to come in second. In each of these legs of the race with regard to, in other words, putting an unmanned satellite into orbit and then putting the first person into space, just kind of up and down, and then the next leg of actually orbiting the Earth and then eventually, going on to the moon, it was very, very close, neck and neck, really. But in those first few legs, the Soviets inched us out and literally just winning on the order of weeks to just a few months in each of those legs. And then the United States would do the same a few weeks or a few months later. But of course, then we won we crossed the finish line in terms of sending a person to the moon. So really, it was quite a competition, I guess you could think of it in that sense.
Well, as the Soviets were launching Sputnik, should mention that the U.S., we were working on our own satellite at the time, Project Vanguard. This is all a part of the International Geophysical Year. But
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when we finally got Project Vanguard, that was sort of a big failure, a big embarrassment to the U.S. at first.
Right. And there were... quite a few failures with the development of launch vehicles that many of which in the early years would blow up or have failed missions for one reason or another. So you're right, and as for any type of technological advancement, we learn from our mistakes, and we do, look at those early missions as failures, but also, interestingly, to coin the phrase that became so popular with Apollo 13, which was considered the successful failure, based on what we learned and what we were able to do, even though we failed at the original goal of sending that particular manned mission to the moon. We got the astronauts back safely. So you can think of it in that sense, too, in the long-term picture of successful failures.
Well, we're talking about this intense race between and competition between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. This was the Cold War. In the creation of NASA, how much politics were involved? President Eisenhower is Republican. Both chambers of Congress had a Democratic majority, and neither party wanted to be seen as causing the U.S. to fall behind the Soviet Union.
That's true. And actually, I do think, the space race, and you know, our involvement in it really was a really unifying event. You know, there obviously were the differences in the political parties, but the American people as a whole were behind it, regardless of political affiliation. So, you know, when that's an interesting point you raise, because you know, President Eisenhower was a Republican. He signed the legislation into law, and it was not long after that, then in the early 1960s, 1961, where President Kennedy, of course, gave his famous speech to Congress, you know, challenging our country to, by the end of the decade, to send a man to the moon and return him safely to the Earth. And so that crossed the political boundaries.
In the creation of NASA, were there pre-existing agencies that wanted to be a part of the action?
There was, actually, and the precursor to NASA was NACA, N-A-C-A, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, and that actually was rolled into the NASA legislation that President Eisenhower signed 55 years ago today, as you pointed out. And there was about 8,000 employees, as I recall reading about NACA at that time, and it brought together the government facilities at Langley and also at Ames Research Center in California. Those were two of the now 10 NASA centers around the country, and then of course expanded it, you know, to what NASA then eventually became.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Tom Durkin, Deputy Director of the South Dakota Space Grant Consortium, marking today, which is the 55th anniversary of the day that President Dwight Eisenhower signed the legislation that created NASA. Why was it decided that NASA should have a civilian orientation as opposed to a military one?
The reason for that basically was it was decided, and I think, you know, again, by both political parties, that we should look at the exploration and development of space as a peaceful venture. And therefore it made sense to have, you know, of course we had the Air Force and the Navy, which were all involved with aeronautics and you know, an eye toward spaceflight. But now we've got a civilian organization, you know, that can look at developing the technology to use these resources for peaceful means and for, you know, bringing governments together, which of course NASA has been very, very good at in terms of, you know, its history of shortly after the space race, you know, working with the Apollo-Mir partnership between us and the Russians, and eventually on to the today's International Space Station, where there's 15 countries involved. So, and one of the other interesting things I picked up on as I was just looking at some information for today's interview is that it also assisted in being able to get things done a little bit more quickly, because there apparently were some roadblocks in doing what we needed to do in developing those early rockets and things solely through the military. For example, perhaps, you know, bringing together the Air Force and the Navy and their respective research into spaceflight. And then by creating NASA, the civilian organization, it was able to remove perhaps maybe some of those bureaucratic roadblocks and were able to allow us to do things more quickly along those lines.
You mentioned earlier President Kennedy's famous declaration that the U.S. would put a man on the moon by the end of that decade. What was that a goal when NASA was first formed?
Yes, and in fact, let's see if I can find this here. The legislation actually that President Eisenhower signed in '58. I'll just read to you. It says that President Eisenhower signed the National Aeronautics and Space Act, which formed NASA, to provide for research into problems of flight within Earth's atmosphere and in space. So obviously there was a lot of research in aeronautics going on in our country, you know, within the atmosphere, but and now it's looking at both the problems of flight within and outside the atmosphere. Is that what your question was?
Yeah, Yes, yeah. Yes. You know, following up on what you're saying about what the way NASA is cooperating with the Russians today, mm-hmm. I guess it would be a shock if we were to go back 55 years and see what the people would have thought at that time, that someday in the future we would be cooperating.
Right. And that is a really good thing that NASA can bring to the table. Obviously, there are areas where our country and their and the Russians certainly don't see eye to eye. But we really have had, in terms of both of the space agencies, a very close relationship. And the astronauts that I've spoken to that have been involved with the shuttle program, the International Space Station, all say that. So that's a good thing, at least in that sector. Both countries' space agencies have a very good working relationship, and that's developed over many years.
Have the objectives for NASA over its 55-year history changed much?
Well, yes, they have, and of course the first objective, again, with President Kennedy wanting to send a man to the moon, so there really was a big difference in terms of what we did back then and what we did after the Apollo program, where everything really, in terms of manned missions, has been centered around low Earth orbit missions, satellite deployment, the development of the space shuttle, which was really designed to put satellites in orbit and then eventually build the International Space Station, could only go up to low Earth orbit, a few hundred miles up, and deploy these satellites. In 1972, after Apollo 17, and we had been to the moon, with six missions that actually landed, the focus changed then to near-Earth orbit missions in terms of the manned programs. The unmanned programs, though, have continued on, a large number of them with the robotic missions out into deeper space. And again, NASA has just been stellar in what it's been able to bring to mankind through what we've been able to learn about the universe through these unmanned missions.
It's as you mentioned, the last Apollo mission to the moon, that was Apollo 17, 41 years ago. There have been a lot of things since then, the space shuttle and the International Space Station, which we've been talking about. But do they still capture the public's imagination the way the Apollo moon missions did when we had that one directive that we all understood? It's like,
right.
get a man to the moon.
That's a really good question, and I think not just one definitive answer, but I think overall probably nothing captured the public's attention and imagination as the Apollo lunar landing. That was like the vanguard in terms of those missions. But that said, things like the Hubble Space Telescope, has over time really tremendously captured the public's attention. And in fact, some scientists argue that the Hubble Space Telescope is the most significant scientific instrument ever made by mankind, based on what we've been able to learn about the universe from it. So there's been some real inspiration, I think, that has come in regard to that. But I do have to say, my opinion is that the manned missions are by far the most inspiring for people.
Well, Tom Durkin, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us again on Dakota Midday.
You're welcome, Carl. Have a good day.
That's Tom Durkin, Deputy Director of the South Dakota Space Grant Consortium. On this day in 1958, President Eisenhower signed into law legislation creating NASA.